This is an election news special, Talk of the World, from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan at the Newseum in Washington, D.C., with NPR senior news analyst Ted Koppel. Over the past 8 years, opinion in the United States has plummeted in many parts of the world, something that began to change with the election earlier this week of Barack Obama, and there's expectation of much more change after he takes office on January 20th. However, American interests around the world will remain the same, and the challenges, too. A global economic crisis, the environment, nuclear proliferation, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Today, we'll talk with the former Mexican president, Vicente Fox. Mohamed El-Baradei, Nobel Prize winner as a head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, and with Nobel laureate and environmental activist Wangari Maathai. And we want to hear from our international listeners today. What role do you want the U.S. to play? Do you look to Washington for more leadership or less? Give us a call. We'll call you back. Our telephone number is country code 1-202-513-2008. Again, that's country code 1-202-513-2008. You can also join the conversation by email. That address is talk@npr.org. We'll also take questions from the audience here at the Newseum in Washington, D.C., and we want to thank all of you for coming in today. Appreciate your being here. And, in fact, let's begin today's broadcast with a question from the audience here at the Newseum. Go ahead, please.
Simon Wilson, I'm the Washington Bureau Chief.
Just a moment. Go ahead.
Simon Wilson, I'm the Washington Bureau Chief for BBC News. First of all, a couple of anecdotal things. Our coverage to Britain and around the world on BBC outlets has had astonishing ratings. You know, this all the anecdotal stuff you've had about people wanting to know is coming through in our figures. It's been really phenomenal. People staying up all night in the UK and all over the world to listen to our coverage of what's going on here. And just for me personally, as a foreign journalist, to be based in America at this time has been extraordinary on a personal level and a professional level. I wanted to throw a thought out there, and I think it'd be really interesting to hear what Ted Koppel has to say about this. In recent years, the international news coverage by American newspapers and the TV networks has suffered enormously. I think, you know, NPR is a great and honourable exception to this. But the economic problems in the American media have meant there's been much less foreign news coverage coming from the rest of the world back to the United States. And I just wonder, Ted, if you think that a more outward-looking presidency might have an impact on this.
No. I don't think it's going to have an impact because you point out quite correctly that it has happened. It's really happened for two reasons, economic and technological. The technological side is you have roughly the same audience that you had 20 or 30 years ago. You have 10, 20, 30 times as many different outlets. They are competing for the advertising dollars because they are, and because advertisers get more money for younger viewers. And networks perceive younger viewers as being disinterested in foreign news, and foreign news being the most expensive news to cover, therefore little or no foreign news coverage, and the economics of that are not going to change, so I don't see any change in the coverage.
I mean, do you think there's anything that the new administration can kind of do to encourage that?
No. I mean, you know, unless they declare another war, you know. Unfortunately, when we first...
A popular one, we would hope.
Well, popular or unpopular. I mean, the fact of the matter is when the United States invaded Iraq, there was huge engagement and involvement. And now if you watch the evening news broadcasts, there are very, very few stories out of Iraq anymore. Iraq and the Persian Gulf are just as important as they were 6, 7, 8 years ago. But the fact of the matter is, thankfully, young American men and women are dying in smaller numbers, and therefore the level of interest is way down.
So we'll need to get everyone listening to NPR and watching and listening to the BBC.
Certainly, and since I work for both, I can't disagree with that.
Thanks very much for the question. Let's see if we can go now to the phones, and we're going to talk with Jens, who's a German native visiting this country. Jens, you're on the line. Go ahead, please.
Yes, hello. My name is Jens. I'm indeed a German native. I live in Athens, Greece. I'm an EU diplomat, and I especially came to the United States to visit my twin brother and his family to share the experience of the election. And I must honestly say, this has been a most moving, extraordinary experience, and I think it does testify to a number of issues. One is very much, yes, a thirst inside the United States to indeed open a new chapter. But I think it tells us a lot also about Europe. It tells us a lot about how Europe wants to reconnect politically, for example, to the United States. How in the past 8 years it has felt that there has been a disconnect and that now the language, the personality, the image is changing and there's an opportunity on the table to reconnect. I also think that it tells us a lot about European countries that in a way, in their expression of sympathy for Barack Obama, they're actually also looking for such an expression in their own European countries, and they're not finding it yet. And hence they're turning to the United States, where there is a very positive development, but they would also embrace such a development in their home country, be it in Athens or in Berlin.
As you look, though, at this situation, the United States is still the most important economic power in the world, still the most important military power in the world, though one greatly stretched by its current commitments in Iraq and Afghanistan. As you look at the flight of capital to the United States dollar and to the Japanese yen, given the current economic crisis, this has also begun to shift a lot of priorities around the world.
Yes, indeed. It has shifted priorities. It has immediately affected me. As a visitor to the United States holding euros, it is in the exchange rate just not as advantageous anymore as it was just a few months ago. But I would like to emphasize another point, and that is it tells me something about the way I have seen Mr. Obama on television, on NPR, listening to him, that here is somebody who is willing on a multilateral form to approach the issues in a coordinated manner, to talk differently with individual world governments, to talk with central banks, to listen. He's advisable. He has a team of economic advisors that suggest to me he listens to them, even if he disagrees with them. And here the tonality of the whole debate, I think, can change, and it opens the door. There's a window of opportunity that you can sit at a table, and even if you disagree, you can coordinate your moves. And this is very important right now in times of such an economic crisis, which has, on a global scale, affected so many countries. So immediately, they are also looking then for global answers, for coordinated answers. And I think Mr. Obama has deft craftsmanship to provide such answers in cooperation with other leaders.
And Jens, here's your one and only opportunity to nominate the next Secretary of the Treasury. Who would you like to see in that job?
I think not so much who I'd like to see, but an expert who has international experience, who can talk more than one language. I think, for example, Mr. Summers is a candidate who is well-positioned to do so.
The once and perhaps future Secretary of the Treasury, Lawrence Summers. Thanks very much for your phone call. We appreciate it.
I thank you.
The Obama administration faces a series of urgent challenges on the national security front. U.S. troops fight in Iraq and Afghanistan. Barack Obama, the candidate, said the world cannot tolerate a nuclear-armed Iran, and North Korea continues to play nuclear cat and mouse with international inspectors. For the last decade, Mohammed El-Baradei has led the world's atomic watchdog organization, the International Atomic Energy Agency, and he's now with us by phone from Vienna, the headquarters of the IAEA in Austria. And Mohammed El-Baradei, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me, Neil.
And you recently said you've been encouraged by some of the things that President-elect Obama has said. What do you expect from an Obama administration when it comes to Iran? Do you expect him to be good to his word, that he cannot tolerate a nuclear-armed Iran?
Well, I expect that, yes, President-elect Obama and the international community at large should not tolerate nuclear weapons Iran or any other, frankly, nuclear weapon new state. But I also expect and hope that they will engage the Iranian government in a direct negotiation without precondition, as he stated. To me, this is the only way for a durable solution to the Iranian issue, Neil, because it's a part of a complex web of insecurity, lack of trust, integration with the rest of the international community, particularly between Iran and the U.S. So there is no durable solution without a direct negotiation without precondition, and that's why I'm very encouraged by President-elect Obama's statement. But I'm also, you know, support him that we should make it very clear that the world and the U.S. should not tolerate any new nuclear weapon state. In fact, we should work exactly in the opposite direction. As he said, we need to work toward a world free from nuclear weapons.
Dr. Albaradei, this is Ted Koppel. If I was sitting in Tehran today and I watched what had happened between the government of North Korea and the United States, and how the United States has actually become, or the Bush administration more specifically, more willing to discuss and negotiate with North Korea now that it has become apparent that they have nuclear weapons, why should I, as an Iranian leader, not conclude that I have far more leverage in terms of Iranian interests if I have nuclear weapons than if I agree not to have them?
Well, Ted, that's a very good question, frankly, and I have been baffled for many years as why the U.S. was able to have a direct negotiation with North Korea and not with Iran. North Korea having developed nuclear weapon, and Iran is suspected of just working to develop the technology. I think the answer to your question that we should not wait for Iran to develop nuclear weapon. We should raise the cost. If Iran were to develop nuclear weapon, as you know, there are sanctions, and the international community should make it very clear that there is a very high cost if Iran were to develop a nuclear weapon. But there is also a lot of incentives. If Iran were to roll back, you know, it's any ambition they might have to develop nuclear weapon, and it's basically going back to the old diplomacy, the carrot and the stick, and how to balance these two. That is at the heart of the resolution of the Iranian issue, which, unfortunately, in my view, has been mismanaged for a number of years.
Stay with us, if you would, Mr. Albaradei. We have to take a short break, so we'll ask you to stay on hold for just a moment, if you would. We're talking about the global challenges that face the administration of President-elect Barack Obama. What role do you want the United States to play in solving major issues, greater or lesser? If you'd like to call us, our country code is 1-202-513-2008. You can also join the conversation by email. That address is talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan, along with senior news analyst from NPR, Ted Koppel. It's an election news special, Talk of the World, from NPR News. This is an election news special, Talk of the World, from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in the Newseum in Washington, D.C., along with NPR senior news analyst Ted Koppel. Two nights ago, newscasters around the world reported the same breaking story, the election of Barack Obama as the next president of the United States.
La victoire de Barack Obama, premier président noir.
Es que Barack Obama ha ganado las elecciones en Estados Unidos.
Barack Obama, избранного президента Соединенных Штатов.
US President Barack Obama, für Auswirkungen auf die Welt.
American Senator from Illinois, Barack Obama.
Барак Обама يدخل التاريخ ويصبح
выборах он позвонил Бараку Обаме.
L'America ha scelto la storia, Barack Obama il nuovo presidente.
Some of the international news coverage last Tuesday night. The administration in Washington, D.C. will change come January 20th, but many of the global challenges faced by the new president will not. Today we want to hear from international listeners. What role do you want the U.S. to play in these crises? Do you look to Washington for more leadership or less? Give us a call. We'll call you back, and we'll pick up the charges. Our phone number, country code 1-202-513-2008. And you can also join the conversation by email. That address is talk@npr.org. Ted Koppel is with us. At the moment, we're speaking with Mohammed Albaradei, Nobel Peace Prize winner, as head of the International Atomic Energy Agency. He's with us on the line from their headquarters in Vienna. Ted?
Dr. Albaradei, how terrible would it be if Iran had nuclear weapons and if we simply said to them, all right, you've got them, but now we're going to hold you responsible for the management thereof, and in the event that you have them, as long as you behave yourself, all kinds of wonderful things can happen politically and economically. If anything goes wrong in your part of the world and nuclear weapons are involved, we will hold you responsible. Why would that not be a workable solution?
Well, it's an alternative, Ted, but I think it's a horrible scenario because the message we will be sending for any country who want to have power, prestige, influence, protection is to go for nuclear weapons. And the more new states with nuclear weapons, the odds that nuclear weapons will be used either accidentally or intentionally. That's why people like Henry Kissinger and Sam Nunn and their quartet came recently to say that we need to move toward a world free from nuclear weapons because nuclear weapons have become increasingly hazardous, decreasingly effective. I think we need to change the whole environment of our collective security system, Ted. I mean, unfortunately, we still, you know, live in an environment that the nuclear weapon states say to the rest of the world, nuclear weapons are dangerous. But for us, we have to rely on it, and we have to modernize it and even develop new nuclear weapons. And I have been saying for a number of years that system is not sustainable. Add to that the fact that the technology is out of the tube, that the most danger I see, Ted, is that an extremist group getting hold of nuclear weapon or radioactive source.
I take your point, Dr. Albaradei, but from everything I understand, if the Iranians are determined to go ahead, there is, in effect, nothing we can do about it.
Well, I think we still can do a lot. I mean, to start with, let us talk to them directly, Ted. I mean, for the last 3-4 years, we have been setting conditions not to talk to the Iranian. And you mentioned that we have been talking directly to the North Korea. I mean, let us at least try diplomacy, as President-elect Obama has said. Let us try diplomacy. Let us try direct negotiation. If it doesn't work, then we will see what would be the next step. But I still believe that if Iran were to be engaged, if Iran to see clear benefit of not developing nuclear weapon, like engaging into normal trade with the U.S., normal relationship with the rest of the international community, importing peaceful nuclear technology, getting a security package. I mean, a lot of what the Iranians are doing, I think, is they feel that they are living in a neighborhood which is not the most friendly, frankly, and you need to create a disincentive for the Iranians to develop nuclear weapons. I always ask myself why Finland, for example, never think of developing nuclear weapons and why Iran would probably think or Egypt or Turkey, because the Middle East is a hotbed of insecurity, violence, instability, repression, corruption, you name it. We need to change the environment, A, to create governance, to create development, and also to make it clear that nuclear weapons does not bring you, you know, the benefit you think it will get you, but it would cost you a lot to go in that dangerous road.
Dr. Albaradei?
Yeah.
I'm afraid we have to say goodbye. We wanted to thank you very much for being with us this evening.
Thank you very much, Neil, for having
thank
me.
Thank you.
We appreciate it, and we have to say goodbye because our next guest, the former president of Mexico, Vicente Fox, has just a few minutes to be with us. He's been very patient waiting on the line. And President Fox, it's good to have you with us tonight.
It's a pleasure. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Vicente Fox joining us from his ranch in San Cristobal in Mexico. And I'm sure that you were listening closely to Barack Obama as he campaigned for president of the United States. The issue of immigration hardly came up at all during the whole context of this long campaign from either candidate. Now that he's president-elect, Obama, does this concern you?
First of all, I think it was a great example of democracy for the whole world. We all followed that election, and we were all nourished with democratic values. And of course, the world is same as the people from the United States with high expectations on Barack Obama, the new president of the largest nation in the world and the largest economy. For Mexicans, it's extremely important, this election, and we attend what the commitments, what the new relationship is going to be between Barack Obama, the president of the United States, and Latin America, and concretely with Mexico.
Well, 8 years ago, it was George W. Bush who broke with precedent and had visited you in Mexico before visiting north of the border with Canada. Do you think that symbolism would be important again this year?
Well, let me tell you, right at this moment, I'm in Rancho San Cristobal, where all of you have your home. And this is where we had that summit meeting between the President Bush and President Fox, and we came out with a commitment there, which was to move ahead with a reform on immigration. And at the very end, in 6 years, nothing happened. Of course, I understand the problems that were caused by this very sad day of September 11th. But at the very end, we not only did not advance on immigration, but on the contrary, I think we're worse than ever. This is why my first intention right now is to have the opportunity to meet with President-elect Barack Obama and bring to his attention all of our points of view in relation to immigration, which is what we are discussing and debating at Central Facts at the presidential library that we just finished building right here in Rancho San Cristobal, and which is a think tank. And we've been working for a full year about the reform on immigration. I think it's time that we come out with a solution to this key issue.
President Fox, this is Ted Koppel. What would be the two or three points? I mean, assume that the president-elect is listening avidly to NPR right now. What are the two or three points that you would like to make to him? Perhaps we can cut some time here.
Well, number one is to have the awareness of the magnitude and the impact of the immigration issue between two leading nations like it is United States and Mexico and two leading regions, Latin America and North America. So first, awareness. Number two is facts have been carrying out throughout history, and today there is millions and millions of immigrants in United States, and they are hard-working, decent people looking to improve the quality of life of their families. And by putting together that desire with the need of the U.S. economy for labor that U.S. citizens do not want to take, like it's farming, like it is service industry, like it is collecting apples or building homes or whatever. So the idea is to put together those two facts and come up with a reform. Number three, I would say that there has to be a solution for those undocumented that are working for a corporation, working for an institution, working for a family, working in the rural areas, working in different sectors of the economy in the United States, and bringing in competitiveness to that economy. So that must be considered. And some solution as temporary guest programs should come about for those who are already there, who are working, who do have a job, and that are contributing to the better being of the U.S. economy. Number four is the future. The U.S. economy needs additional 500,000 new jobs every year that U.S. citizens are not willing to comply with or not willing to take. So for that is the proposal of a temporary guest program so that they can come in, work, and when they finish their work, they go back home.
President Fox, we have a caller on the line, Adolfo, who is from Honduras but calling us today from Miami. Adolfo, you're on the air. Would you go ahead, please?
Yes. Well, I also would like to congratulate the United States for this symbolic triumph. In Honduras, the perception of Obama is a symbol of reform, of hope. And let me explain why we feel this way. First of all, is that there's a saying, I think, in English that goes that you have to walk the talk. And now with this triumph of Barack Obama, we can listen to Americans and their rhetoric, and we can see that as far as democracy is concerned now, the Americans are walking the talk. I don't think that I remember ever seeing a lot of, during the campaign, any emphasis on immigration. I think that because of how polarized the topic could make the discussion, I don't think that it was something that it was made part of any of the discussions during the debates. I think that only newsman Jorge Ramos in an interview with McCain and in a separate interview with Obama asked him point blank what were they going to do. And I believe that former President Fox has stated that the issue needs to be revisited. We only can expect no immediate miracle changes in policies, but the winning of Barack Obama means that perhaps the same way that he was elected because of the content of his character as an individual and not because of the color of his skin, and this is a major triumph for all minorities, I believe, and at least for my own, I'm speaking on my own about this, we believe that it is a major triumph, and perhaps it is a good time to view immigration with a new set of eyes.
Thank you very much for that, Adolfo. We appreciate the phone call. President Fox, as you look at the situation, you follow politics in the United States quite closely. Are you afraid that as the Republican Party realigns after its loss in these elections, that it is going to become the party, the anti-immigration party?
Well, they have to come up with solid ideas and at least the position of Senator McCain in relation to the reform was very positive. The reform they presented together with Senator Kennedy, I think is a great answer to the problem. But who knows how they're going to move. For the moment, I think that President-elect Obama has to better understand what I read on his book about outsourcing, what I read on his book about jobs in the United States. I think he was forced because of the election to have a very local view and a little bit forget about the commitment of that great nation with the rest of the world. And at the same time, the linkage between the U.S. economy and the rest of the economies in the world. Today, the world is flat, no doubt. And you cannot build walls when you should be building bridges. And you cannot isolate from the rest of the world. And you cannot protect your jobs by isolating within your economy. You protect your jobs when you associate to gain productivity, competitiveness. And he will understand that the power of the manufacturing industry or the power of the U.S. economy, it's only viable when it works together in trading, when it works together associating with other nations.
And we have a call, I think, on just this point from Simon calling us from Oslo. Simon, are you there?
Hi, I'm here.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, first let me commend the American people on making a great choice in electing a president. It seems so intent on promoting collaboration, cooperation, and unity both at home and abroad. I like that, and I believe the world desperately needs a mindset like that.
Thank you, Simon. However, your question, please.
I've followed the campaign very closely, and I've heard many variations of Obama's stump speech, and he's always returned to this mantra about protecting American jobs. And while that may sound great in the ears of struggling American workers, I'm a little worried that an Obama administration would set up trade barriers that would put an even greater strain on an already hurting world economy.
And let's put that to President Fox, former President Fox. He also spoke about renegotiating the NAFTA agreement, and I'm afraid we just have a few seconds for you to respond, but we'd like to hear your thoughts.
Yes. Well, of course, NAFTA can be renegotiated with a positive attitude and to further expand and further integrate. It will be a total mistake if the thinking of opening NAFTA is for limiting the potentiality that NAFTA has. Many people in the United States and maybe President-elect do not know that Mexico buys from the United States $250 billion U.S. dollars worth of products that we import from the States. We import cars, we import computers, we import telephone, everything. That means hundreds of thousands of jobs for U.S. citizens. So we are partners. We, in a way, depend from each other, and that has to be understood.
Simon, thank you so much for your call. And President Fox, I hate to interrupt, but I'm afraid we're out of time. We appreciate your being with us today. Former President of Mexico.
Hello to everybody. Goodbye.
President Fox joining us from San Cristobal, his ranch in Mexico. We'll get to more of your calls and emails in a moment. I'm Neil Conan, along with Ted Koppel. It's an election news special, Talk of the World, from NPR News. This is an election news special, Talk of the World, from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington, D.C., along with NPR senior news analyst Ted Koppel. The expectations of the incoming Obama administration are huge. In the Sunday Times in Perth, Australia, Sandra O'Malley wrote, Australia will want to be reassured the new administration plans to continue America's long-term engagement in the Asia-Pacific. In London's Guardian newspaper, Simon Tisdall cautioned, there is reason to keep one's feet on the ground when it comes to changes in U.S. foreign policy under Obama, given the daunting domestic agenda he inherits and the lengthy complexities of the transition. It may be many months before Obama and his still unappointed team get the chance to apply themselves seriously to the biggest challenges he has outlined. We've posted a roundup of global opinion on our website at npr.org. Today, our focus is on the many challenges facing the new administration around the world. In addition to the hundreds of member stations in the U.S. that are carrying this program, we'd like to welcome those of you listening to World Radio Switzerland, Swedish Radio, NRK Norway, Polish Radio, and the many other broadcasters who've graciously agreed to carry this program. We want to hear from our international listeners today. What role do you want the United States to play in global crises? Do you look to Washington for more leadership or less? Give us a call and we'll call you back. Our phone number is country code 1-202-513-2008. Again, that's country code 1-202-513-2008. You can also join the conversation by email, and that address is talk@npr.org. We have this from Eamon in Cork, Ireland. My daughter Kira, age 10, was asked in school yesterday to write the letter that they would think either Rosa Parks or Dr. Martin Luther King would send to Barack Obama. The fact that a class like this, many thousands of miles from the United States, might be such a topic of discussion is a measure of the impact of his election. And joining us now is Wangari Maathai. She's the founder of the Green Belt Movement in Nairobi, Kenya, and a Nobel laureate for her environmental work. And nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you.
And we know that Barack Obama is considered not just a child of the United States, but a child of Africa in general and a child of Kenya in particular, too. So I expect there's been great rejoicing there.
There has been a lot of excitement, yes, indeed.
You wrote in today's Guardian newspaper in Britain, the United States has truly overcome, the world is joining in. And you wrote you hope that African leaders can take advantage of the opportunities Obama's administration is likely to create. What opportunities do you think President Obama will offer to Africans?
Well, I think that one of the challenges that Africa has been faced with is governance, trying to create democratic states and peaceful states, and they have been inflicted with conflict. And these conflicts are mostly due to inability to overcome ethnicity. So I'm hoping that the victory of Barack Obama and the performance of the Americans will inspire African leadership and be able to take advantage of the friendship that Africa has with the USA.
And what role would you expect President Obama to play in that? Governance is an issue for many African nations, as you suggest, but nevertheless, changing that surely is an internal African matter and an internal national matter.
Well, I think it can very much be assisted by the United States and other developed countries by, for example, promoting better trade relations. We have had very unfair trade relationship where we are not allowed to enter the market and especially we are not allowed to export.
I think telephone connectivity may be soon on their agenda because we've apparently lost the line to Nairobi, Ted.
It sounds that way. You know, I was interested, Neil, in the question you raised and have been raising throughout this hour and the previous hour, and that is how much U.S. leadership does the rest of the world want? And I would suggest to you that when U.S. leadership or when what the U.S. wants coincides with what a particular country wants, they regard it as leadership, and when they don't, they regard it as interference. And I think one of the questions we have to ask ourselves is, to what degree will President-elect Obama feel the need to interfere in other countries' affairs for the benefit of the United States?
Let's see if we can get a caller up while we see if we can get Wangari Maathai back on the line. This is Aliyu. Aliyu is with us calling from Sierra Leone. Abdullah, go ahead, please.
Abdullah.
Yes, you're on the line. Go ahead, please.
I'm Abdullah from Saudi Arabia.
I apologize. I was misinformed, as somebody once famously said about the waters in Casablanca.
Okay, that's right. I am honored to be on air, especially talking to you and Ted Koppel. I'm a viewer of Ted Koppel since 1982, and I learned my English and politics from Nightline.
Well, your English is superb. I don't know what your politics are.
Well, I wish that Nightline had concentrated on issues other than Israel in the Middle East. I think Obama will be a successful international leader, not only just an American leader, because he can relate to being half African, half Muslim, half European, and even half Asian, being from Hawaii and studied in Indonesia. I can see that he has... he's going to have a lot of influence in many continents, not just. And then also, I wish Obama can resolve Middle East terrorism through spreading democracy and liberty for these nations that suffered under tyranny, under oppression, from not just in Israel, but all of the Middle East governments are responsible for these problems.
Point out that the United States has not been spectacularly successful spreading democracy in the Middle East thus far.
Well, because they didn't have Obama. Hopefully now we can. Sending troops to Iraq and fighting the Iraqi people from Bush, thinking he's a cowboy, and entering American, like the American Indians wars, that doesn't work in the Middle East.
Abdullah, can I ask you a quick question? When you talk about these autocratic or even tyrannical regimes in the Middle East, do you include your own in Saudi Arabia?
Well, I'm not. I am even taking risk by even calling. I will put the blame on all the Middle East governments from Morocco to China. So there are problems with every aspect of life here, from environment to human rights to waste of resources. Some governments are a bunch of thugs. They call themselves a government. And we will not have any benefits or economic benefits from their policies.
No, I appreciate the risk that you are taking in even saying what you have said, but you understand the thrust of my question. You wouldn't want direct U.S. physical intervention in Saudi Arabia, would you?
I think that indirect through scholarships, through education, through cultural exchanges, through environmental awareness, through spreading the values that America has, which has proven through this election that America, although in the last 18 years the whole world suffered under the Bush administration, Americans said enough is enough. Saddam was responsible about these problems, but Bush was another Saddam to us.
Thanks very much for the call, and we do appreciate the difficulties in which you've been calling.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Wangari Maathai is back with us, again, the founder of the Green Belt Movement in Nairobi, Kenya, and a Nobel laureate. And I wanted to expand just briefly to talk about the environmental issues. You've no doubt heard the concerns of the current administration in Washington, which argues that any agreements, global agreements, do not take into account that developing countries like India and China are not doing enough to abide by these agreements either. How can the United States engage those countries and become more active in joining these movements?
But I think if the United States of America joins in, especially in the ongoing discussions on the post-Kyoto protocol mechanisms, it will be encouraging to the other countries, because America really has contributed a lot to the problem and should provide the leadership in seeking solutions.
Let's get a caller up, and this is Aliyu, and Aliyu is from Sierra Leone, though I believe he's calling us today from Cincinnati. Hello, Aliyu.
Yes, I'm calling from Oakland, California.
Okay, well, go ahead, please. Apparently people are able to make very fast movements on the telephone today. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm calling from Oakland, California, and my issue that I want to bring to the table is what is President Obama going to do with regards to making African leaders more accountable to their people? There are many countries in Africa that are blessed with a lot of natural wealth, like Equatorial Guinea that has a lot of oil, but it appears as if the people still remain way, way down in the poverty line, and life is pretty bleak in those places. And the more life, the more bleak life is in those places, the more wealthier the leaders of those little countries are. And the more they use tricks and things as force to subjugate their own people. What would President Obama want to do about a situation like that?
Well, let me ask you, Aliyu, what would you like to see him do?
Well, I would like to see America become more proactive in the area of preventing things like humanitarian disasters, man-made humanitarian disasters, such as what is going on in Darfur right now. The United States has lost influence in Sudan. The Chinese are moving into Sudan. And the reason why is because the Chinese are upholding the human rights violations that are going on there, and the United States is saying nothing about it.
Well, the United States has called it a genocide, but the United States has called it a genocide. And but you're right that the Chinese government has more influence with the government of Sudan right now than Washington, D.C. does, for sure, because the Chinese buy Sudan's oil. Wangari Maathai, do you see a problem when you have developing countries like China who are willing to overlook questions of human rights and environmental damage when making deals with various countries in Africa to obtain their natural resources?
Well,
yes, it is very tragic, and we have sometimes been trying to raise this awareness to call upon countries like China to be more responsible, to encourage African leaders. But in the final analysis,
the telephone connections in Nairobi are still leave something to be desired. Aliyu, we thank you very much for your call, too. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
And Ted Koppel, one of the interesting points of convergence during this presidential campaign was both John McCain and Barack Obama said the United States needs to do something about Darfur. What remains to be determined? Both of them told about no-fly zones. Where would they put the planes?
You know, the extraordinary thing is when you hear people talking, and on the one hand, the last caller from Oakland there who would like so desperately to see the United States become more directly engaged in Sudan, other callers who are warning President-elect Obama against the kind of intervention that has marked some aspects of the Bush administration. There is just, you can't have it both ways. And go ahead.
We have a Somali on the line. In fact, Haribi is calling us. A Somali who's living in Saudi Arabia and listening to us from there. Haribi, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I can hear you.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you very much. First of all, many Africans believe that President Obama is their son, so they expect a lot of things from him. But in view of the daunting job facing President Obama in his country, U.S., we are worried that he might not have any time for the country of his father, that the continent of his father, I mean, which is Africa. So what we expect from Obama is that we are very happy that he is the president of USA, but we are looking forward also that he might give limited time of limited amount of time to Africa, because Africa is looking forward to see Obama will help them, because we most of Africans were very happy, like Kenya, which they gave one day off due to the election of Obama. So we are expecting that he might help us also. We have a lot of problems. We have terrorists in our country. We have financial problems. But we hear only Obama is concerned about his country in USA, and he will never talk about Africa. So we hope he will give some of his time to us also.
Haribi, hang on just a moment. We do have Warangi Matai back with us on the line from Kenya. We do apologize for our difficulties sustaining the connection there. We just have a couple of minutes left. What realistically do you expect from a President Obama when he's got all the terrible problems in Iraq and Afghanistan? He's got terrible economic problems at home and economic problems around the world. Do you, like Haribi, fear that he will have little time for Africa?
Yes. Well, I think that it is important for us to realize that there are certain things he cannot do. What I expect that Africa should do is take advantage of the doors for trade, for example, renegotiate about the debt, for example, ask to be assisted to bring more peace into the continent so that they can develop. Because what Africa is suffering from is incapacity to utilize our own resources, and instead is allowing people to come and exploit our resources. Now, Obama is not going to come to Africa and do the work. The Africans must do the work, but he can create opportunities through trade and such.
Well, Wangari Maathai, we again apologize for our telephone problems, and we thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Wangari Maathai, founder of the Green Belt Movement in Nairobi, Kenya. We know it's very late there. We appreciate her staying with us all this time. And Haribi, if you're still on the line calling us from Saudi Arabia, we thank you for your call, too. And Ted Koppel, my colleague here at NPR News, our senior news analyst, thank you very much for being with us today.
It's always a pleasure, Neil. Thank you.
We'd like to thank all of you who called and emailed this hour. We're sorry we didn't have time to speak with you all. And thanks to the member stations who brought you this program in the United States and the many overseas broadcasters kind enough to carry today's program. They include World Radio Switzerland, Swedish Radio, NRK Norway, and Polish Radio, among others. A special thanks to our team at NPR Worldwide, Kingsley Smith, Svetlana Stepavina, and Carlos Barrio Nuevo, and to Dalia Martinez, who produced today's program, and to the Newseum in Washington, D.C., for hosting us today. We're hoping this will be the first of many conversations we have with a worldwide audience. If you'd like to hear future editions of Talk of the World, please let us know. Send us an email, talk@npr.org. If you don't regularly get our program in your country, you can always visit npr.org to listen to our coverage and to participate in the conversation. This is an election news special. I'm Neil Conan, Talk of the World from NPR News.